The gospel lesson for the seventh Sunday of Easter is John 17, 20 through 26. I was just going to comment in response to my colleague and department chair that, of course, some of us see this Easter season as a foretaste of that life pictured in the second reading from Revelation, when there's no more sorrow or pain or tears or suffering, and all the readings are done in Greek.
Oh.
So it's like the parousia brought forward.
Oh.
So,
okay. In heaven, we'll all be speaking Greek. Me genoita. Me genoita.
Okay, let's turn to John 17 as quickly as possible here. Okay. This is a very interesting passage, not just because of the content, which of course is what we want to focus on, but just from a Greek grammatical point of view. In this short pericope of seven verses, we have nine hina clauses. So we will try to take a look at those as we go through. But first of all, remember we're in John 17, which is part of the lengthy farewell discourse that Jesus presents to his 11 disciples here in John's Gospel. And chapter 17 is the concluding part of that, which is a long prayer that Jesus offers for their sake, and is often simply referred to as the high priestly prayer of our Lord. We are nearing the conclusion of that, and as Paul already introduced, the theme here in this portion of the prayer is going to be unity. And not just any unity, but a unity Jesus will define by comparing it to the oneness of the Godhead, the oneness of Father, Son, and Spirit. Let's begin then with chapter 20. This continues the prayer, and you can see here, ou peritouton de eroto manon. The peritouton concerning these ones, those would be the disciples that he's been now praying for in the first section of the chapter. And here he says, ou peritouton manon. Not for these alone, and de, the adversative, but not for these alone. We're starting a new section here. Eroto, from erotao, an alpha contract there. Do I ask or pray? And it's the standard way to pray peri for someone in the genitive, with the thing asked expressed in a variety of ways. But before we get to that, he explains now what he means. Allah kai peri ton pistuanton diatu logu auton ace emet. And as usual, the vocabulary we see here is quite straightforward. Most of you, I'm sure, can sight read it, but along the way you see a few little strange things. But also, Allah kai. For those believing, pistuanton is a present participle, diatu lagu auton, through there, that is through the word of these disciples of mine, the ones he's been praying for. Now, eis emeh, you notice the word order here seems a little strange. We would usually want to put that with pistuo, believe in me, and that's a normal expression for John. But some have noted that with that placed at the very end, it could also be taken with logu. And perhaps the unusual word order suggests that we take it with both, that it's believe in me on account of their word eis eme, about me, their testimony about me. The tenses of the verbs actually in the whole farewell discourse requires some extra attention. You notice here we have a present, and some would say this is the present participle standing in the place of the future. Because the proclamation of the 11 hasn't taken place yet, Jesus is praying for those who will be believing in him. But the whole farewell discourse is spoken almost from the standpoint of eternity, at least as if the work of Jesus had already been accomplished, rather than this was the last moment before he enters the climactic scene of his passion. So here it's spoken as if there is already a gathering of believers. And pistuo in the present tense, especially in John, suggests an ongoing, a continuing in faith, a remaining in faith. And we'll see in a little bit the aorist tends to suggest the moment of coming to faith. Okay, so Jesus is praying here not only for these men gathered in the room with him, but for all those who will believe on account of their word, which of course includes you and me. Okay, now in 21 we get our first hina clause. Hina pantes hen osin. This hina clause here is best taken not as a purpose. I'm not praying with this purpose in mind, but the hina expresses the content. I am praying that they all be one. So the first hina here is the content of the prayer, and that's also a standard way to complete erotao. Then you have a katos, which defines now this oneness, comparing it, just as you, pater, en emoi, kago, en soi. So just as you, Father, are in me, kago, remember, is just the contraction of kai and ego, and I, in you. So this is the oneness that Jesus is praying for here, that they might be one just as we are one. And now our second hina clause, and here I think it's best to see this one really as paralleling the first. It explains and expands somewhat on the content of the prayer. Hina kai autoi en hemin osin. That they also, autoi, that is these believers, osin, again, this is the subjunctive for ami, third person. You don't see it too often, but here it is, that they be in us. So they also be in us. So this complete unity that Father and Son enjoy in the Godhead now is to include those who believe in the Son. Okay, then the third hina clause of this first part is finally, I think, a purpose. Hina ha kosmos pistue poti su me ap estelos. Why is he praying that they would enjoy this unity? So that ha kosmos, the world, might believe that you ap estelos, erist from apostello, you sent me. And in John, that's sort of a summary statement that all of Jesus' claims about himself are true. So who he is and what he's come to do are sort of all summed up in this idea that the Father has sent him. So in one sense, to believe that is to believe everything about Jesus. His works testify to that, and so on. We'll see that idea come up again. Taking the last hina clause as a purpose then allows us to be consistent here in seeing that Jesus doesn't pray directly for the world. And that's a rather surprising statement that occurs earlier in chapter 17, that he prays for his own but not for the world. But you see, the world is indirectly then included in his will for his disciples. He prays that they be one for the purpose of bringing the whole world, and cosmos is generally pictured in John as being opposed to the Christ and his mission, that they might believe in him. Okay. What follows in verses 22 and 23 is the same pattern of Hina, three Hinas, and most have suggested that those also parallel the first three that we've seen, with a few little differences, with some progression, we might say, or some development. We see once again the kago, from the crassus of kai and ego. So, and I, tain doxon hain dedo kosmoi. Let's get to dedo kos, our main verb here, autois. So, and I, for my part, dedo kos, the perfect from didomi, I have given autois to them in the dative, and then our accusative direct object, tain doxon, the glory. Now, which glory? Here it's described with this relative clause, hain dedokos moi, the glory which you have given, also perfect, now second singular, to me in the dative. So, and I have given to them the glory which you have given to me. And again, keep in mind all the aspect ideas of the perfect, so this is a continuing possession of the one who has received it. The glory that Jesus has is the glory of God made manifest in him. And now he says he has given it. When? Well, again, he's speaking as if his work is already complete and there is a church now that makes manifest the glory of God on earth. Okay? So some say you should see this second half as if the prayer has already been granted. He continues with such confidence that his Father will grant his prayer that he's now talking about the results or the effects of it. And there is this church that possesses its glory. Hina osin hen kathos hemes hen. So in order that, or that they may be one, here... again, this echoes the first, hina, that they may all be one. This is the content of his prayer, and it's the result of his work. You have the kathos, hemes hen, just as we are one, which again echoes the first kathos, just as you are in me and I am in you. And so you can see this kind of pattern being replicated here, but with some now progression in the thought. Ego en autois kai su en emoi. Again, before we had the you are in me and I am in them, now it's the focus shifts to the relationship between Christ and his believers. I am in them and you are in me. So this Christ brings the believers to enjoy the oneness that he has with the Father. And again, a hina, which sort of expands or explains the first one. Hina osin teteleomenoi eis hen. Now here you have the perfect of teleao, a verb that stands out as Jesus' word from the cross in John. Here we see it in the perfect periphrastic with the participle, or the the subjunctive of eimi and the perfect passive participle of teleao. Brown suggests a kind of literal translation of this with that they may be. That they may be brought to completion. Or brought to completion as one, with the ace hen at the end. You'll often see it simply translated that they may be completely one or attain perfect unity. And teleao here suggests that idea of completion, that a process has been brought to its telos, its final end. So once again, we've had hina. Kathos, hina, and a fourth part of this second half, a final hina clause, which again now speaks of the world and suggests the purpose for all of this happening. Hina ginoske ha kosmos, ὅτι σύμε απ' εστελος, καί εγάπησας αυτούς κάθος εμέ εγάπησας. Okay, so in this second purpose, we see not that they may believe, but that they may know. And in John, those two ideas are often put in parallel, often used, maybe not interchangeably, but to enhance one another. So that the world may know that you sent me, and remember the first one was that they may believe that, now that they may know this, and agapezas autus, and that you loved them, kathos eme agapezas, just as you loved me. Now here the tenses seem a little out of place too. We have aorists for agapao. There are a couple of ways of looking at these. Some will suggest that it's to use the timelessness of the aorist, that it's looking at it as one complete act. Again, you can say it suggests that perspective of Jesus here, that he's looking on all these events as if his work of salvation has already been made complete. So in this conclusion to this portion of the prayer, you see that the world knowing that the Son was sent by the Father also includes knowing that this church is the Father's beloved just as the Son is. Okay, we continue in verse 24. Pater ha dedokas moi, fellow hina hapu emi ego, kakenoi osin met emu. So again, we have Father. Jesus addresses the Father here in the vocative. Now, ha is the neuter singular relative pronoun. What you have given to me, with again the dedokos in the perfect, fellow, I desire, and then we have a hina clause which expresses what the desire is. It completes the idea. Wallace calls this the complementary use of hina. That hapu, where I am, also these. Now here it's kai with akenoi, brought together by krasis into one word, kakenoi, that they may be with me. Notice the ha is replaced in some of the manuscripts with the masculine plural, which is what we would expect for agreement and so on. But this isn't the first time Jesus has spoken of the group of those given, a group of people given to him by the Father, sort of with a neuter singular, perhaps to suggest their unity, that he views them as one group. So he does, this is his desire, that they be where he is. And of course this is in following not long after Jesus had told them, where I am going you cannot come. So this is his desire in the future. He's also said he's preparing that place, that way for them to remain with him forever. Okay, now hina feorosen, in order that, here again a purpose, this is the reason now for his desire, from feoreo, that they might see the glory, tain emain, my glory. And again, the glory of the Son is the glory that the Father has given him. It's the glory of God manifest in the Son, the glory which he had from the beginning, and so on. Hain dedokosmoi, the glory which you gave to me, hoti agapesas me pro katabolēs kosmu. And here, for, this is sort of the evidence, the proof of this glory, for you loved me before the katabolēs, the laying down of the world, which is really the foundation, the very beginning, or here we would say that the beginning of the creation of the world. So you loved me before the world was created. Okay, then continuing 25. Pater dikaia. Kai ho kosmos sa uk egno. Ego de sa egno. Pater dikaya, in some manuscripts you'll see the nominative form here, the pater with the eta. In Hellenistic Greek, it was not uncommon to have nominatives substituted for vocatives, but in this case, there's even a discussion of whether the eta was already becoming an alternate way of spelling the vocative. But in any case, you have dikaya, the adjective, in the vocative, agreeing with it. So, just or righteous father. And that's an interesting title at this point. An interesting way for Jesus to address the Father. But we can think of especially the 1 John passage where God's justice is connected with His forgiveness of our sins. If we confess our sins, He is righteous and will forgive us. This justice is a blessing for those justified, those within His grace, but for those who refuse it, His righteousness often means judgment, punishment. The kai here after dikaya is rather strange. It doesn't seem to follow any of the normal usages. Barrett was the only one I could find who really makes any comment on it, and he just says it's obscure. Which I don't know if that even counts as commentary. He suggests that it probably is meant to correlate the statement about the world with the statement about the followers, and I think that's probably the best way to take it. Others will suggest it's a kind of concession, which of course, you know, the context almost suggests anyway, but the point is you have one group who knows and another that doesn't, and they're being contrasted. So it's true that both the world does not know you. And again, we have to keep in mind the importance of knowledge in John. They have not, that is, sort of up to this point. Remember, it's his prayer that they would, that the world would come to know God through the church and their word about Jesus. But I have known you, with the ego there, kai hutoi egnosan, and these ones know that su me ap estelas. Again, we have this sort of summary of Jesus' identity as the one sent by the Father. They recognize that you sent me. They know me as the one you sent. So their knowledge of the Father at this point, we might say, is not immediate, but is through the Son. And then finishing it off, verse 26, kai egnorisa autois. So they know this already, but from gnoridzo, here again the aorist, but I made known to them. If this were Hebrew, what would we say? That's a pl or something? Iphi or causative? P.A.L. That now instead of just knowing, I will reveal or make known to them
Hifil.
Ta anamasu, your name. And this again connects it with the idea Dr. Robbie was mentioning earlier of placing the name on the people of God. I make known to them your name. I have made it known, and gnoriso, I will make it known. So this work of revealing the Father will continue. In order that, our final hina clause, hey agape hein agape zasme, in order that the love with which you loved me, en autois a, might be in them or among them. And here, I think it's Brown that makes a nice comment that this really no way to distinguish between in and among here with the love of God. If it's in each Christian, then it's among them as a group. If it's among them as a group, it's in each. In fact, both ways sort of require the other. And then Jesus concludes with, kago, as also I, en autois. And here again, we could say the same thing, both in them as individually and among them as a group. In terms of a few concluding comments here, this is our last Sunday in the Easter season, and we have seen everything from the good news of the resurrection announced to the way Jesus has made himself visible to his own. And this then points us forward that in the future, the world will see the Son through his people who believe in him. That's where his glory will be manifest. And seeing him in them, they can come to know the Father just as his disciples have come to know the Father. The idea of the church is becoming perfected into one or enjoying complete unity sounds like it's pointing us forward to the last days. But that's also to have an impact on the world right now. So it speaks both of a future perfect union, but also of the church's sort of completeness, its oneness in him right now, and the way that forms part of its witness to their Lord. So I think this is, a wonderful gospel for this seventh Sunday of Easter, and it ties together also, or at least suggests some of the themes that Dr. Robbie was mentioning about this oneness enjoyed where the word of blessing is spoken, where the communion of the Lord is celebrated in a visible form, where we see both our oneness together as a community and his indwelling, his one being in us, each individually. So again, I thank you and pray God's blessings in your preparation for preaching.